your ship for sea, make all preparations for getting underway.
Aye, aye, sir.
Ah, the peaceful countryside. What more romantic way to enjoy it?
Oh, hello there. So glad you could come along. I am the Dream Finder.
Horizons 1 is now departing. Our final destination today...
WDW Radio.
Your information station.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to the WDW Radio Show, your Walt Disney World information station. I am your host, Lou Mangiello, and this is show number 370 for the week of July 20th, 2014. I am here to help you have the best possible Disney vacation experience and bring you a little bit of Disney magic wherever you are with this podcast, my videos, blog, live broadcasts, special events, my Walt Disney World trivia books, my new book, 102 Ways to Save Money For and At Disney, my audio tours, and lots more. You can find everything over at WDWradio.com. So Walt Disney World has changed a great deal over the past four decades. It's grown exponentially, adding a wide variety of new experiences. But growth also sometimes means that existing things have to be taken away. So this week, we're once again going to hop aboard my Walt Disney World Wayback Machine to look at the extinct restaurants of Walt Disney World. From the parks to the resorts, we'll visit some of the eateries from the past and some of Disney's forgotten foods. I'll then have the answer to our last Walt Disney World trivia question of the week and pose a new challenge for your chance to win a Disney prize package. Then stay tuned as I'll have some updates and announcements, including information about upcoming events in and around Walt Disney World. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode of the WDW Radio Show. As someone who has visited Walt Disney World every year, at least once, since it opened, with my first visit being back in November of 1971, I, like many of you, have seen many things come and go. We've seen the addition of new parks, lands, resorts, shops, and restaurants, but along the way, we've had to say goodbye to some things as well. And while many people lament the shuttering of Mr. Toad, Horizons, 20,000 Leagues, and Stitch's Supersonic Celebration, sometimes we forget about some of the other things, dare I call them attractions, that have closed as well. So this week, I'm going to combine two of my passions and loves about Walt Disney World, history and food, as we take a look at the extinct restaurants of Walt Disney World. And joining me is a man who also likes Disney history and a good handwich. He is Ryan Wilson, editor-in-chief of the Main Street Gazette.
How's it going, sir?
It's going well, but Ryan, I got to tell you, as I was getting ready for today's segment, I cry a little bit on the inside as I think about some of these because they were fun. They were often somewhat unique and many times very delicious.
Very delicious indeed. I had the same kind of feeling that I'm looking at this going, my stomach would start rumbling because like, I remember eating that. That was great. Why don't we have that anymore?
Yeah, and there are some things too that were... different to say the least, and we'll hit some of those as well. And I like this because I always sort of geek out when I take people through the parks, and I like seeing if they remember where some of these places were. And look, you know, I get strange looks all the time, but they get even stranger when I'm going, oh, Gurgies, Munchies, and Crunchies. They're like, what's a Gurgy?
What's a Gurgy? Gurgy? Wow, Gurgy, Munchies, and Crunchies.
See, most people don't even know if that's accurate or not because they never saw the Black Cauldron. So.
No, and Disney tried to sweep that past us for a little while. But I'm the same way. I get people all the time, you know, when I'm in the parks, and I get the same strange looks because I'm like, and this was this, and they're, are you sure?
Yeah, so. Like, why are you getting so excited about what this FastPass station used to be? So, and I'm like, oh, because this is what they sold, and, you know, but. So I think the simplest way to do it is, sort of turn the Wayback Machine on, and let's just go park by park and land by land, and just hit some of the things that have changed or evolved and really kind of lost over time. And we were saying, you know, certain times people say, oh, you guys forgot about Refreshment Corner. Well, Refreshment Corner technically is still there. You know, it's just called Casey's Corner now. So names right. have changed, but I really wanted to focus more on the things that are no longer there. And in saying that, I'm sure I'm going to go, oh, but don't you remember when this used to be called the Town Square Cafe?
Yeah, I had those same kind of notes. And we should probably warn people now, they should probably get snacks because they're probably going to get hungry listening.
Yeah, we'll try and see if we can remember some of the food items as well.
Oh, good. That's going to be a nice quiz.
So I'm going to let you go first. When you think of extinct restaurants or extinct dining locations, we should say, on Main Street USA, because it could be counter service, it could be food carts, whatever it might be, where do you go to first?
The first thought, for whatever reason in my head, is the Town Square restaurant, which used to be much more Victorian. It was kind of more – a little bit more sophisticated dining than Tony's Town Square restaurant.
Yeah, so this was the Town Square Cafe. Mm. I think Oscar Mayer was the – was it Oscar Mayer first and then Hormel before it changed to Tony's, which is now –
I think it was Hormel and then Oscar Mayer is okay. How I think it went.
Yeah, and you're right. So this – It was in the same location. Obviously, it didn't necessarily have the Italian menu that Tony's does, but this sort of gave you the sense that, and I think it really tied in with this idea of what the exposition hall is now, was really called a hospitality house, and it was meant [S2] Right. [S1] To be that when you, who were a visitor coming to this town at the turn of the century, you went to the hospitality house first. It's where sort of the hotel was, and this really would be sort of where the hotel's cafe would be.
Definitely. They wanted you to feel that warmth, that welcome. And, you know, as a weary traveler, you would want a nice meal. You would want some place to sit down and relax and just take a load off for a few minutes.
And my understanding was this was originally going to be called the Coffee Mill, which was going to have free coffee, believe it or not, because I think Folgers was supposed to be one of the original sponsors. And then that changed to actually being more of a sit-down restaurant and a cafe. And I think it changed to Tony's in like summertime, 1989, somewhere around there.
Somewhere around there, yeah. I have it right around the turn of that decade.
Yeah, and didn't they have, when Oscar Mayer was the sponsor, didn't they have, I don't want to say a character, but sort of an Oscar Mayer-ish character or like representative there too?
I think I have some vague memory of somebody necessarily, not necessarily like a costume, but like, somebody who was like supposed to be the Oscar Mayer, the face of Oscar Mayer, kind of a thing.
Right, right. So moving down Main Street USA, I'm gonna turn the corner to some place that sort of it literally straddles the border in between Main Street and Tomorrowland, and it kind of, depending on what map you looked at in what year, sometimes it was in Tomorrowland, sometimes it was in Main Street USA. You would pass the ice cream parlor and make a right. And actually, the Plaza Ice Cream Parlor used to be Seal Test, and then I think it was Borden's originally, and then Seal Test. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But where the Tomorrow – I still call it the Noodle Station. I don't know what to call it anymore now. Where the Tomorrowland Terrace is, that was originally called the Plaza Pavilion. And then it was the Tomorrowland Terrace, and then it was the Tomorrowland Noodle Station. But that really was – sort of the basic hamburger, hot dog, soda kind of place, whether it was part of Main Street or part of Tomorrowland.
Right. And it's always had that ambiguous feel to it. You know, you could see, you know, it borders right on Main Street. You have that great view of the topiary dragon and, you know, all these different pieces to it. And they never seemed to quite make up their mind if it was supposed to be more futuristic, if it was supposed to be more, you know, turn of the century. But it was. But it was a nice outdoor place to sit and eat, and still is if you can catch it when it's open.
Right. And it clearly, like, if you look at it now from the hub, it clearly has a Tomorrowland feel to it. So it says, oh, this should definitely be in Tomorrowland. Like, where is the question? Where is the distinction? But at one time, and we'll, this is a separate, and I know we keep talking about how we're going to do this, but at one time, this was slated to be something called the Explorers Club, which is going to be an adventurers club type restaurant. It would be a sit-down restaurant where there would be walk-around characters from, you know, real characters from history like Galileo and Sir Isaac Newton. And there'd be a giant telescope up on top, and these people would sort of be regaling stories of, you know, their scientific exploits throughout the years. So it would have sort of fit into that Jules Verne-ished, you know, era Victorian feel, but still had that futuristic look. So it would have been a great bridge from Main Street Victorian era into Tomorrowland.
Absolutely, and it would have been the flip side to what we get when you look at the Crystal Palace, which very much has that Victorian, you know, colonial kind of going out into the jungle kind of feel to it, but still has that Main Street vibe. This would have been the same thing on the opposite end, looking at tomorrow through the telescope, having these great explorers from days gone by, and it would have tied it together. And instead, now the border is basically that restroom.
So you don't, when you go into the restroom, you don't know if you're in the past or in the future. But if you think about it, you know, sort of a top-down view, those would have been two awesome gateways. Mm-hmm. You know, restaurants that act as gateways and transitional elements other than just the bridges from Main Street into the land. And I love the Main Street to Adventureland bridge. I think that's one of the great transition points in any of the Disney parks. Tomorrowland is a little bit different because it's so wide open, because there are so many different avenues into Tomorrowland. You have to sort of walk under that archway to sort of get that, you know, change in that feel. But I think the one from Main Street to Adventureland is much more seamless and much more subconscious. And I think these two restaurants would have been really neat anchors for it. And actually, speaking of Crystal Palace, I think a lot of people don't remember, you know, it's buffet now, it's, you know, hanging out with Pooh and friends, but it used to be cafeteria style until like mid-90s somewhere.
Yeah, and you see a lot of that when you start looking back at the history of the restaurants, where they would go from this, you know, cafeteria food court kind of standard to more sit down, more family friendly kind of dining kind of options.
Yeah, and before we leave Tomorrowland, do you remember there actually used to be a little snack bar underneath the Main Street Railroad station? It was called the Station Break. And it wasn't there very long, and now obviously there's stroller rentals and wheelchair rentals and things like that. But at one point, you can get, you know, little snacks down there too.
Yeah, that's why you catch it everywhere. There's a lot of little snack areas too that just have gone the way of stroller rentals or fast pass machines or any of those kind of things. But yeah, I have a vague recollection of that one.
Yeah, so let's sort of go back to where we were in terms of the Crystal Palace moving into Adventureland, because I always go like whenever I go to the parks, I'm a clockwise person. Like I go from Main Street to Adventureland as opposed to going to Tomorrowland first. And I love that transitional element. I love sort of getting over that bridge and, you know, all the things that it represents, and even sort of just the audio and the visuals and the greenery. But if you cross over that bridge and look to your right, currently where the Tinkerbell meet greet area is, that red tile roof covered building there used to become something called the Adventureland Veranda. And this building, even before you got inside, like this building was very cool because this is one of the few that does not use forced perspective, meaning it was built full size because they needed to hide. Once you got into Adventureland, you needed to hide Cinderella Castle off in the distance, sort of to keep continuity in the architecture and help you sort of suspend disbelief that you are actually now in an exotic land, you know, overseas somewhere. But inside, and I know we've been in there recently, you know, relatively recently when they started serving sandwiches and things like that, it's a beautiful, like, mahogany ceiling building, and there are ceiling fans in there. And this was the Adventureland Veranda, and it had, like, sandwiches and fried chicken. But I think things got very interesting in the 70s when Kiko Man, the soy sauce company, they took over, and you had things like teriyaki hamburgers with pineapple, French fries and raisins on the side, sweet and sour hot dogs, and they had like a stir fry in there too. So it really kind of, to me, tied in very well with not just Adventureland, but like with the Polynesian Village Resort, which was sort of meant to, you know, they're all kind of connected.
Definitely, yeah, it was. It was one of those weird things where when it opened, you had fried chicken and hot sandwiches, which don't necessarily feel like a jungle kind of a dish. And then when Kikkoman comes in, you get these great Polynesian dishes that would really beckon you from the hub. Like, you could smell the grilled pineapple and the grilled meats, and you'd want to go try it out. And let's just be honest, they could open the doors today and there'd be a line out the door anytime for something like that in the parks. But they did. You had these great, you know, the second floor had these bamboo kind of patio kind of looking things in the main dining hall. And you got to the side, there's this very Victorian stained glass on the windows. And it was just it was an incredible place to go and eat. And it was a, you know, it's like we talked about with everything else, it was that gateway restaurant into the rest of Adventureland.
And, you know, it's a big space, too. I mean, that's a big building. And there's a full kitchen there, too. So I understand the need to give, you know, certain characters a home, especially an indoor home with air conditioning. But I still think, and maybe I'm holding out false hope, that the Adventureland veranda is still another great dining, a potential future dining option in Magic Kingdom.
I think, like I said, yeah, anytime they'd open the doors, people would come. You know, if they serve it, they will come. But it's such a unique dining opportunity in that place that I wish we got another chance. And I'm sure that there were hearts that sank everywhere the minute we brought it up, because they all love the place too.
All right, so sinking hearts will transition me from one lost treasure to another, because I'm going to go all sentimental, as if I don't always. And as a kid, I regret the rolling of my eyes and complaining to my dad when he wanted to go to where Guest Relations is now on Main Street, USA, to make his reservations, because you need reservations, mm-hmm. day of, for the Diamond Horseshoe Saloon. Because way back when, it wasn't a meet and greet, it wasn't a counter service, it wasn't a dance party. The old Diamond Horseshoe was really a saloon show with dancers and a band and a comedian. Like, it very much played off the original Golden Horseshoe in Disneyland. But, you know, the player piano that's there now and that stage that's there now was really for a show. And it was a sit-down restaurant on the two levels. I loved being able to sit upstairs and look down. And it was a real show with real, like, table service food. And it was, you know, we talk about dining experiences. You know, take sort of a light version of Hoop-Dee-Doo and mm-hmm. put that in one of the most beautiful venues, I think, too, in Magic Kingdom.
Oh, absolutely. The floors there are gorgeous. The pillars are gorgeous. You know, they have the mounted animals on the wall. It looks gorgeous. It looks like an old-fashioned saloon. You know, you take every preconceived notion you have of a saloon, and they put it in there. And you had, you know, the girls in the big skirts doing their can-can kind of dances. And you had, the comedian telling his stories and songs and the music. And it was very much, you know, the meal was maybe a step down from like Hoop-Dee-Doo, but the entertainment was just top notch.
Yeah. And you know, and I said that because I used to complain, like, oh, dad, like, really? This week, again, he loved the Diamond Horseshoe. Maybe it was the can-can cancers. It could have been the food, whatever it was. But think about having, again, another sit-down restaurant
right.
inside Magic Kingdom.
Oh, absolutely. I, you know, it's one of those things that we think about oftentimes, where the food at Magic Kingdom has, you know, especially at sit-down level, aside from if we take out Be Our Guest, has hit like kind of a plateau. There were so many options back, you know, in days gone by where you could go and sit down and have a really great meal.
And, you know, when I say a show, I don't mean that the show was sort of this 15 – like, it was like a 45-minute
right.
to an hour-long thing. And it evolved, right? It became the – Diamond Horseshoe Saloon and Medicine Show for a while, and they had the Traveling Troubadour and Wildcat Kate, Dr. Bill You Later, and eventually it closed in about 2003 or so, and it was Goofy's Country Dance and Jamboree, and then it was a character meet and greet, and now I still believe that they do some quick service lunchtime food, normally open when it's you know, holiday season and summertime
right.
when it's really crowded.
Yeah, it hits those peak hours, so you can still go in and look around and see the gorgeous architecture, see the gorgeous design. And, you know, you can almost, if you listen real closely to the player piano, you can kind of hear the old show.
So, all right, let's move farther down, forward in time and farther through to Adventureland. When you hear me talk about some of my favorite hamburgers in Walt Disney World, you know I will invariably go to Pecos Bill. But next to Pecos Bill was something, and the building is still, the blue facade is still there. But at one point, That was known as the mile-long bar.
Yes. And you had our good friends from the Country Bear Jamboree, Max, Melvin, and Buff, coming out to talk to guests as they were leaving the show. And you had this great bar that had mirrors on you know, both sides that made it look like it was a mile long. And it was Pepsi and Frito-Lay, if I'm correct.
Right.
Wanting to and they had, you know, Frito pie, and that was where you could get all your Pepsi and Frito products, especially Pepsi if you were not a fan of Coke.
Yeah, and that's one of the there's a lot of interesting things to me about the mile-long bar, right? So you came out of you exited from Country Bear the same way you do now. And as you exit Country Bear, you look up and there's Melvin, Max, and Buff's heads, and you turn around and where their backside should be are three more of their heads. But they spoke, you know, they spoke and they kind of interacted with guests. It was sort of like a mini show the same way as you walked out. But the cool thing too was you got a little bit of some Mexican style food. They had some churros and some other, like, I think they had like tacos and burritos and things like that. But the fascinating thing to me was that at one time you could actually get both Pepsi Cola and Coca-Cola products inside Walt Disney World until Coke at one point just sort of put a complete and utter stop to that.
Right. It's blasphemy these days to say you want both of them in the park.
Right.
But it was one of those really rare. It was very small, and now it's become part of the service area for Pecos Bill. But it was one of those great little, just, you know, hole in the wall kind of places that really added to the experience, especially if you were coming out of Country Bears and you were being told to move it along by, you know, a giant moose head.
And that closed in the late 90s. I'm going to say like 1998, 1999, somewhere as well. And again, I think we're going to continue on with our feelings of ridiculous sentiment and nostalgia, because when I think of Frontierland, I think of the Diamond Horseshoe, I think of the mile-long bar, and depending on where you want to put this on the map in the land, I also think about poor sweet Aunt Polly.
Oh, I was hoping we talked about it. If we missed it, I was coming back to it. Oh, Aunt Polly's Dockside Diner, and it was this, you know, it's still there. You could still sit on the rocking chairs. You know, once upon a time, it served, you know, cold fried chicken and cold sandwiches and potato salad, and you could basically have a picnic on the island, and you could just sit there and watch the boats go by. You know, whether they were the keelboats or canoes or, you know, the big steamboat. You could watch the Haunted Mansion. You could watch Thunder Mountain. And it was a great spot to grab a bite to eat or maybe an ice cream cone and just let everything go for a few minutes.
And it was never crowded, I think, because people didn't realize where it's like, oh, I don't want to get on the raft. I don't want to cross. I got to walk over there. And the little porch area is still there. And there, you can often – like, I've actually gone there – when I was writing the audio tours, I actually worked there a lot because I was able to sort of look out over Liberty Square and Frontierland, get a lot of the ambiance and sort of, you know, immersion in the place as I was writing. But there was never anybody there, and it's covered and it's cool. And you can still see where the snack stand used to be. Now there's just a couple of – and I don't know if even this – I haven't been there in a long time. I don't know if the soda machines and the –
Yeah, the vending machines are still there, yeah.
Because I think even right before it closed, they weren't serving, like, hot food, but you could get, like, those Smucker's peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for a while. But yeah, poor.
Yeah, this is one of those places, and I kind of did the same thing whenever I come down for research. If I need a few minutes just to compile some notes or look back at some stuff I've done, I do. I go out. That's one of the spots I'll go to and sit and just, you know, take in, you know, the atmosphere, take in those moments, and then just write and scribble some notes down so that I have something to resort, you know, to look back at when I get back home. But let's just be honest, Tom Sawyer Island is near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, it's again, it's the as I said at the beginning, it's sort of the geeky nostalgics in both of us. Liberty Square hasn't really changed very much in terms of dining. And you're like, oh, well, Liberty Square dining locations, there's only Columbia Harbor House. There actually wasn't. There was actually another very small little snack stand. It was called the Fife and Drum. And for years, I used to walk by this building and go, God, like, what was there? I couldn't figure it out. Nobody knew. Cast members were like, dude, just go ride the rides. I don't know what you're talking about. But if you're walking past the Liberty Tree, it's sort of in between the Liberty Tree and like towards, I was going to call it the Old World Antique Shop, but if you're walking towards the Christmas shop,
there's a shop.
Mm-hmm. Right, but go to the right instead to where the Princess Tiana meet and greet, and I say unfortunately the smoking area still is. There is a small square shingled building there, which used to be the Fife and Drum Snack Bar. And it was just another little place because other than Sleepy Hollow Refreshments, there wasn't really any other place. Now there's some carts outside to get like just a quick grab and go snack.
Right. And I can remember when we found this building for a while back, and we were on one of our, you know, torturing our friends nights of look at this and look at, and we were like, we sat there for at least 20 minutes going, what was this building? This was something. What was this building?
Right, right. And then once you figure it out, we rejoice and we hug it out, and our wives are like, really? Like, that's what you care about is the building? So, all right, let's move over to Fantasyland. I'm going to let you take Gurgi because I just know that you embrace Gurgi and you do.
I do love Gurgi. I don't know if it was because that's my best memory of what was in that spot, but it's where Friar's Nook was now, and it was at one time in the Lancer's Inn, Lumiere's Kitchen, Gurgi's Munchies and Crunchies, which that's just a fun phrase to say. But it's always been like little snack stand, like having chicken nuggets and meals on the go for kids or something like that. But that is one of the, you know, cornerstones of extinct dining in Fantasyland.
And I always dug this too, and I liked when it was the Village Fry Shop, mm-hmm. and then now as the Friar's Nook, they've got some unique items. Like they've got the different types of, like they have like pot roast mac and cheese and blue cheese, hamburger mac and cheese, which I dig because that little place always had something that you couldn't find elsewhere. So at one point, it was the only place that you could find pizza in the parks. And back when it was... I think when it was Gurgi's, and maybe it was known when it was Lumiere's Kitchen, you used to get grilled cheese sandwiches or I think just chicken nuggets, but you got sort of a collectible cardboard box. So it's like going and getting the Happy Meal, but you get like this cool box that would potentially be different every time you went.
It was, yeah, and that was during Gurgi's run. That was like in that, you know, 80s, early 90s kind of time frame. And you would get this little kind of – it wasn't – and it had usually like a little, you know, PVC plastic figure inside. And it was something cool to take away with, you know, basically a free souvenir for buying the meal. So it was just like a Happy Meal, but Disney style.
Yeah, and so there were other places – not sit down, but quick grab and go places. Obviously, when New Fantasyland changed years ago, we lost things like the tournament tent that had the slushies and snacks and the covered seating area. But if you walk by Peter Pan's Flight, mm-hmm. Now it's the old location of the TikTok Croc, you know, Fast Pass area.
Right.
That was at one point known as the Troubadour Tavern and then Hook's Tavern. Unless I'm getting those backwards. But the cool thing about the Troubadour... it was Troubadour first and then Hook's Tavern,
yes,
right?
Right.
So the cool thing about this was it was sponsored by Welch's, the grape juice people. So you can get juice bars and grape juice. But this, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan, this is the place or one of the places that you could get as a kid. If you bought apple juice, it came in a little plastic apple. If you bought grape juice, it came in a little plastic bunch of grapes.
Yeah, there were like two or three locations where you could get that in the park, but this was one of them. You could get your frozen ice cream. But the juice is what you wanted because that was, you know, you were drinking grapes out of grapes.
Right. And you know, those are one, I don't know why, because I know it's so ridiculous, but this is one of my holy grails of collectibles because I can't, everybody sort of remembers it, but nobody kept it. Like, who's going to keep the little plastic apple thing 40 years later? Just like that. And do you remember when I'm going way off on a tangent, but do you remember when you used to put some change in on Main Street USA and you could make a little wax figure, little wax Mickeys and Goofies and Donalds and things? I can't seem to find those either.
I can't find mine either. No, I had them like, because you know, they also had them in like science museums and they were everywhere, it seems like, for a long time. And now they've gone away, and I can't seem to figure out where I put all of mine as a child. My parents probably melted them down for something.
Right. Again, at some point, they probably got hot and they melted, and we or our parents threw them away. Those two things and one of the custom perfume bottles from Madame Lafitte's Perfumerie in Liberty Square, that still, too, is one of my holy grails of collectibles.
Yeah, there's. I have a couple of Holy Grails. I actually, you know, and we'll get to it later, but I actually found one of my Holy Grails when I was moving recently. So
really?
Yes.
Oh, see, I like the tease. All right, let's move over into Tomorrowland, unless I'm forgetting something else. And there was little things like the round table and
right.
Like,
the only other thing is, you know, they changed, you know, King Stefan's banquet hall to Cinderella's royal table, because why would Sleeping Beauty's dad have a restaurant in Cinderella's castle?
Right. I understand they wanted to make it sound like it was regal, but at some point, it wasn't someone to go, wait a minute, that's not her dad. Why?
That doesn't go there. Right. So that's about all of the I'm missing in Fantasyland.
Yeah. So, but in Tomorrowland, you know, again, I think we already touched on the Noodle Station-ish restaurant. But where Cosmic Rays Starlight Cafe sits now, in that same location, and this changed back in the maybe 94, 95-ish.
Yeah.
That was the original Tomorrowland Terrace restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I got what they were trying to do here, right? They were trying to make it seem like it was a very futuristic restaurant. So everything had these funky names like the Orbit Burger and the Moon Burger and the Space Dog and the Gemini Burger and all those kinds of things. And they were very inexpensive. Like, it was less than a dollar for a hamburger. But for a short period of time, and again, I would love to find pictures of this, and maybe it was the heat and humidity that's getting to me, so correct me if I'm wrong, to make it seem more futuristic, like the ketchup was purple and the mustard was green to make it seem like you were getting this funky, futuristic, yet oddly colored hamburger.
Right. Everything in the future was going to be a neon colored something.
And how come we're not – aren't we all supposed to be wearing gray spandex at this point, like Erin Gray and Buck Rogers?
I believe so, yeah. I think that was still back in that day. I think I even remember somebody with like a plastic helmet at some point. I don't know, yeah.
It could be. And it's hard to find pictures of some of those things because – in the 70s, nobody was taking pictures of their food on their smartphone.
No. So. And nobody really wanted – and if they were in those suits, nobody wanted to be remembered that they had to wear those suits.
Right, because you were buying your film like at the GAF Camera Center, and your little thing only had like 18 shots. So you're going to make those things last. You were not going to waste it on the Gemini burger.
No, you were going to wait until you got to those photo spots, and you were going to take your picture in front of that because it was a great backdrop. You weren't interested in grape, you know, or purple-colored ketchup.
No, it's only like a random, you know, obscure picture that you might find it in the background. You know, everyone else is looking like, oh, look at little Johnny in his bad 70s clothes. We're like, oh, my God, it's a Troubadour Tavern in the background.
Right. Look at that trash can. Look at that trash can.
All right. So let's go over to Rocket Tower Plaza. And I'm using air quotes as if you can see me. And the lunching pad. Because when the lunching pad opened in the 70s, remember, it didn't open with the rest of Tomorrowland, because Tomorrowland was a barren wasteland in October of 1971. But it not only – it served, like, healthy foods. Like, they had tuna sandwiches with alfalfa sprouts and organic bread and honey bread and vegetable salads. Like, I would – now that I'm trying to, you know, be careful what I eat, I'd love to see those things again, because they had, like – you know, frozen yogurt and coconut macaroons and all, because it was sponsored by Sun Giant, like the raisin people. Mm-hmm. But it later featured something that I alluded to at the beginning, which was the is that the oh, I missed the handwiches sound? Is that the
that yummy? Was the, no, that was the drum roll. I thought that was, but yes, it is the I know. I made a list of where handwiches used to be available.
So, guys, so hit the handwich thing, because I think a lot of people are going, what in God's name is a handwich?
So, you know, and we've been lucky. They're kind of making a comeback in the recent years, but the handwiches were, you know, basically a cone-shaped piece of bread that they would stuff all your goodies into for the sandwich, whether it was ham and cheese or some kind of vegetable pattern or tuna salad or Texas-style barbecue, and they would shove it in, and you had basically – one hand with the sandwich that you could eat it on the go and your other hand free for chasing your child or taking pictures of your handwich or whatever you wanted to do.
Yeah. So where else – do you remember where else in Magic Kingdom you could get it other than the lunching pad?
I couldn't come up with any place in the Magic Kingdom that I could remember or that I could find. I do know that, you know, the farmer's market over at Epcot had them. Mm. But I couldn't find any place else in the Magic Kingdom that actually served them, that this was the only – which makes sense. It's the future of food effectively at that point. So that makes sense where we found it at the lunching pad.
And again, you try and find a picture of a hand witch, and you can't. And I agree with you. Like, I like finger foods. I like picking my food up. You know of my deep love and affinity for the Cozy Cone Motel out in Disneyland and food in a cone. I still think it's the future of just like my flying car. And I would love to see those things come back. And we see, you know, every now and then, like on the Disney Parks blog, somebody like Gary or one of these guys might mention a hand witch. So I think there's a couple of guys and they're pulling for the return of the hand witch.
I think Downtown Disney had a couple last year that I saw for a little bit. And then, so you see it every so often, like they're testing the waters, like they're thinking, well, maybe we could bring this back.
And I'm sure some people are going, dude, what's the big deal? You eat any sandwich with your hands. Why is this different? But it was just the unique sort of kitschy quality of the ham, which is sort of like a rolled up pita with just lots of good food stuffed in it. So, all right. So were we missing anything? Did we miss anything in Magic Kingdom?
I'm sure we've missed something somewhere, but we've hit the high notes.
Right. And I want people, if we missed your favorite, please tell us what it is. But let's move over to Epcot Center. And when you think Epcot, an extinct restaurant, where did your mind go first?
Farmer's Market.
Okay.
I'm a kid of the land when it comes to Epcot. And this was, you know, back from when the park opened to like 93 or somewhere there, about that. It was, you know, a set of stalls, and they had like, you know, the bread and the soup stall, and they had the meat stall, and you basically went and picked up the different items you wanted to compile for your meal. And then, of course, the aesthetics of it were great. You had that open courtyard like you have now for dining, but there was this great fountain that just poured water. You know, it had all these geometric shapes and these very natural kind of shapes to it. And then the rooster on the sign above the farmer's market sign that would every hour or so, or every half hour, would come out of his little barn, stick his head out, and you know, cock-a-doodle-doo and tell you that, you know, the time had changed. So the farmer's market was definitely like the first place I thought of when I thought of Epcot.
And it very much had, I don't know how to describe it. It had a Disney feel to it. And what I mean by that is that when Epcot Center opened, it was meant to be very different than Magic Kingdom. It had to sort of remove itself from the whimsy. It was more about future and technology and edutainment. But there was something about the theming of those little, you call them stalls, but it gives me a bad impression, those little areas inside there. And look, Sunshine Seasons still has that, right? I think it's one of the best places to go to get a wide variety. But you went to the thing that looked like a barn in order to get the fried chicken or barbecue.
Yeah, it was just one with like a little, I don't want to call them shacks, but they look like little houses almost kind of things. Like barns, little, you know, they had like windows on one side, and it was just, like had wood shingles and like the wood siding going up the side. Yeah, it had a very distinct feel to it.
It did. They were very well themed. Like, it was actually a well themed area, and as you looked at it, you know, you sort of had to go. It's almost like, I don't want to say the Cozy Cone because they're all cones, but going to each different station would give you a different food. I remember the Nestle Toll House was all the way, I think, on the left, and kids can go and be like chef for the day and make cookies.
Decorate their own cookies.
I actually went, I didn't go there first. I went to the Odyssey. I went to the Odyssey restaurant. Again, that gateway restaurant in between World Showcase and Future World that sits on, and I'm using air quotes again, on the lake, which was basically just a giant sinkhole that they had to fill in. Which is actually why it's there. You know, as legend goes, they actually tried sinking pilings into it, and I think that they are still sinking. So the necessity for a lake was born. But the Odyssey restaurant had that futuristic-ish early 80s feel to it. It was, you know, hamburgers and hot dogs, but it was the Odyssey burger and the Adventurer burger and the Voyager hot dog and the Discovery salad. So it was relatively the same types of food, but like the Tomorrowland Terrace with the funky names, just not the discolored food, you know, sauces and condiments. Yeah. That lasted till like the mid-90s. And I think, Ryan, a lot of people go, why don't they do something with it? You know, what do we do with the Odyssey restaurant? It's used very well sometimes for special events, and to, you can, you know, corporate events to rent it out. But I still think that there is a place for something inside the Odyssey restaurant. I could almost imagine something like the Farmer's Market food court, where maybe it's a one-stop shop to get little samples from maybe nations that aren't even represented in
there's an idea.
So there's the India kiosk, there's the Egypt kiosk, there's the Greek kiosk. And I know it sounds like Food and Wine Festival, but it's inside and air conditioned and it's a place to sit down. There's also a stage in there, so they used to put on like little shows and things
little
like that.
Little character shows.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's a great venue, and I think I don't know if the question is it's just being used for the corporate events and that's what they need it for, or they don't know what to do with it. I would love again to ask you and the people listening what you would do with the Odyssey restaurant if you had unlimited budget and unlimited Imagineers at your disposal.
Yeah, because you're right. It was one of these great venues, and I always said, well, it's too far out of the way. But it really – it's still not – you know, it doesn't open today, but people still use that walkway. If I had my druthers, I would probably go – I like the idea of a sample thing, and maybe even have it where you could sample small bites from even maybe the countries that are still – that are currently there.
Right.
So you can know – so you could say, oh, I really like this. I want to make my, you know, ADR for, you know, the Le Cellier, which good luck with that. But – or, you know, or something – you know, or any of the other restaurants around the – you know, or maybe some of the newer restaurants. Give them a place to taste a new bite, because I can remember going in there and the grilled chicken sandwich being one of my favorite things to eat, and the maybe it was more the toppings bar was my favorite thing to eat, because they had one of the best toppings bars that I think anywhere in Disney World at one point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd love to see it come back and find new life in some capacity.
Yeah, and I think that there's potential for that space, and who knows what they might do with it. But yeah, if you're listening and you have an idea for what you would do with the Odyssey restaurant, come to this week's show notes. Go to wdwradio.com, click on this week's podcast, go to the comment section, leave it there, or go to facebook.com/wdwradio, comment there as well. And I know Ryan and I will definitely keep up on this and check it out. Or you can also tweet us at Lou Mangiello and at Main ST Gazette. Something else. Oh, by the way, speaking of Le Cellier and the inability to get mm-hmm. your table, do you remember when Le Cellier also used to be a cafeteria, just like Crystal Palace?
Yeah,
like
it was way back when.
That was, God, I think it's been 15 or so years. I mean, I think it probably was still in the late 90s when it
Yeah, it stuck around for quite a while. And I can remember going and telling my dad that I was making reservations for Le Cellier, and he was like, the cafe, the cafeteria place, like, and you know, they changed it to Le Cellier Steakhouse. They had a steakhouse on the end, and the menu changed, and the rest is history.
Yeah. So, and the other place too that I think is forgotten, because the pavilion itself, other than during special events, is relatively forgotten, is the
Pure and Simple.
Over at Wonders. See, over at Wonders and Life Pavilion, which, and now it's more than ever, a place like this would do so well because it was meant to be healthy, right? It was guilt-free goodies. So it was like oat bran waffles and yogurt and smoothies and fruit juices and chicken wraps and salads. Like, it was meant to be part of this idea of this life and health pavilion.
It was like a little island that came out and had the neon lights, and you know, it was very 80s in its design, but it was meant to give you a healthier option than the hamburgers, the chicken nuggets, the hot dogs, it wasn't like generic yogurt. It wasn't, you know, you weren't getting something that they had pulled off a grocery store shelf. Somebody had taken some real time and effort and made some really interesting healthy options.
And that pavilion too. And I think that we've actually done a Wayback Machine about that. I'll have to link to it in the show notes. But if you go to www.com and click on and search for Wonders of Life Wayback, we did an entire show about that pavilion. We sort of walked you through it and its genesis and its history and changes. But you say sort of these healthy things that, you know, everything was relatively healthy. In stark contrast to something like the Sunrise Terrace, which was later the Pasta Piazza, which is where the character greeting area is now, because this was basically fried food central, like fried fish, fried shrimp, fried chicken, fried salads, fried desserts, like everything in there was
thrown on pasta and a pizza. And
but this was right. So it was in that the interventions area there, but was another future world dining option.
Yeah, and I didn't go there that often. I don't have a lot of memories of this place, you know, and I do remember a little bit more when it changed to, you know, when it changed to the pizza and the pasta. But it was one of the things that it was right across the courtyard, effectively from, the Electric Umbrella,
which was Stargate, but, originally
which was Stargate time, yeah. Right? Yeah, and so that you had those two options right there, but it was a lot of very fried, the future was fried is basically what you were being told,
right? Fried flying cars and white spandex jumpsuits was what the future looked like. But and I think that's what it was. It was just meant to, those were sort of easy places to grab something, typical theme park food. And while we sort of you lament that they're gone, I like that the trend to where it's going now, which is different food items elsewhere, healthy choices elsewhere. So I don't think anybody's necessarily crying that Pasta Piazza is gone, other than maybe, they missed having the pasta and the pizza.
Right.
So I'm trying to think, nothing else really in, other than maybe just mentioning Ice Station Cool, because I just missed the little, the cool entranceway and the caveman. Like, I want to know what Imagineer's house has the caveman sitting in it.
It's in someone's house, I'm sure. It's like someone's garage. Like, man, right. their man cave has a caveman is probably what's happened somewhere.
But in places like World Showcase, we've had additions of restaurants, but I don't think there's a lot that really has gone other than just sort of changing of names.
Yeah, I was trying to rack my brain. If it's changing of names, the patisserie, moved locations, and some of their classics disappear. But otherwise, there's not a whole lot of change that's come to World Showcase in the form of taking away restaurants.
Yeah. And as we move over to the studios, the same thing as well. Like names, which the Cafeteria of the Stars is now Hollywood and Vine. The Studio Pizzeria is now Mama Melrose's, although I wish it still would have become the Great Gonzo's Pandemonium Pizza Parlor. Like that's,
That's still, it's still on our list.
It's lost Walt Disney World, but not extinct Walt Disney World. But when I think of the studios, yes, there was a Soundstage restaurant, which I thought was a really neat, incredibly well-themed. Like people talk about how cool and the big chandeliers of places like the Be Our Guest restaurant.
Right.
The Soundstage restaurant over the Disney and Studios was the same way. It was meant to be sort of this themed commissary type feel. But I remember big like chandeliers. And I have to tie it in, man, because I think studios, I think catwalk bar and that view looking down on the soundstage.
Oh, absolutely. That whole area had a whole lot of, opportunity for it. And it had these big chandeliers because it was originally – the soundstage was originally supposed to be, the rap party for the 1988 movie Big Business, which was the Bette Midler, Lily Tomlin comedy. And so it was like this big, posh, New York hotel that had the big chandeliers, the really great tile work. But then you could go up to the catwalk, have a drink, and look down on all of this.
And the catwalk, and we've talked about this at length. You can still see the stairs to get up there, but please don't try and get up right. But what was cool about it was very like eclectic. It had all these different types of. It almost looked like they had taken movie prop like chandeliers and lighting fixtures and just hung them up there and then sort of lit them up. But you could get snacks. But I remember they had TVs there. So if you were in the studios and the Giants happened to be playing, like whether it be the football or baseball Giants, you could go up and watch sports inside the park, which I'm not saying I like that idea or not, but it was one of the things that made that place unique.
Definitely, it was. It gave you a completely different vibe that really I don't know that we've seen in a park before or since. But it gave you that a different, unique option that you were going to remember after you left.
Yeah, and obviously when Bear in the Big Blue House came in I guess, late 98, early 99, it was there for a while, and then now you can't even, you can't obviously see it or get to it because obviously you couldn't have people drinking and eating up there while, Bear and
Luna. Your toddlers are, right.
You're right. we're doing their thing below. But because from what I understand, it sat up there, they just sort of shut the doors and left it for a long time, and then they use it for storage, and nobody can seem to know what it looks like right now. Like, are the things still there? Did they gut it? Did they clean it out? What is that space being used for? But I unfortunately don't think anything like that catwalk bar, what it was, will ever come back.
No, I agree. I think there's I think part of it is the liability of, oh, you know, if somebody gets a little too tipsy, they go over the railing. I think the lawyers have had their say on that one, and we're probably not going to see it again.
Yeah. But, you know, even the soundstage too, how that theme changed, right? At one point it would be, you know, themed after Pocahontas or after Aladdin. So when you came back potentially years later, it would be the same space but would have a different theme to it. And that obviously we know that's where the camels from Magic Carpets of Aladdin originally came from after they were used in the Aladdin parade.
Right, right. And you did. You had these, you know, you always knew. It's almost like the animation gallery or the backlot tour, you know. You never knew what different piece was going to be in there, what new theme you were going to discover when you went in.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to quickly go from the parks to I'm not going to hit all the resorts, but before we get to places like the Polynesian and the Contemporary, because it's the nostalgic, we're thinking way back. Downtown Disney, now that's a place that there are a ton of restaurants that have come and gone or changed themes or changed names. When I thought about Downtown Disney and places that were gone, and again, we've done a DSI on places like the Empress Lily Riverboat, which Fulton's is still there, but had a very different feel, a very different vibe, a different theme to it, and I'll try to remember to link to that in the show notes too, where you can just search for Empress Lily if you come to the site. But when you think about places that are extinct, for some reason, the first thing that came to my mind was Captain Jack's. It originally was it was an oyster bar, and that's why I remember, because my dad was, it goes back to my dad, was an oyster guy, and that's where you could go, sit out on this octagonal-shaped building and look out over the water and almost 270 degrees or so and have fresh oysters. And then it became just Captain Jack's restaurant, like in the early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's really extinct because the building itself is gone.
Right. Yeah. And I had this vague memory. I was never a seafood person. My sister was more, my dad was. And so I don't remember Captain Jack's, but I do remember the building and thinking, and, you know, that it was sunk down. It was right on the edge of the water and thinking, that's a really great space.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was neat. And later on, and right before it closed a few years ago, it wasn't my favorite restaurant on property because the menu that I had remembered of a lot of unique seafood offerings that you could get there, an idea that you were really going to sort of this waterside seafood restaurant, had changed. And the menu went from two sides to one side, and there was maybe five or six or seven max options there that were relatively pedestrian. And what I understood later on was because there was no kitchen there. The food there was prepared in another building in Downtown Disney and then brought there and sort of just, you know, heated and stuff there. But they were actually prepared in a separate kitchen. So I understand why they tried to shoehorn a restaurant into what originally was just supposed to be an oyster bar. So I love the location, but the food at the very end was not the best on property.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it had gotten to that reputation, and that's probably one of the reasons why it went the way of all these other restaurants.
Right, and certainly with what Disney Springs is going to become, I think people won't be missing Captain Jack's.
I think they'll have their plates full when it opens.
When you think of Downtown Disney, Disney Village Marketplace, call it what you want. What was the extinct restaurant, if any, that may have come to you first?
I had one, and I can't even remember where the memory is because I have very vague memory. But it was Pluto's Doghouse.
Okay.
Which was just – it was a real simple hot dog kind of a stand. But I don't know if it was because it was Pluto tied with – Pluto serving other hot dogs and that kind of – that jarring kind of a session, that, you know, piece there. But that was the place that I kind of remembered. That and then the Veranda Restaurant. Which was this, you know, it kind of had this upscale kind of feel to it with the Monte Cristos and the strawberry soup and chicken Parisienne. And, you know, it was someplace you could go and sit and have a very nice meal while you were walking. One of the many places you could do that around the marketplace.
And that's where I thought you were going to go first. What was there because, well, I thought you were going to either go there because of the Monte Cristo sandwiches, because I think Monte Cristo, and obviously we think of Disneyland.
Right.
But I thought you were also going to mention that Chef Mickey's was originally, it later became the Village Restaurant, but originally Chef Mickey's was in what is currently Downtown Disney.
Yeah, and it's really the same. I mean, it's the same Mickey that you have Chef Mickey's now at the Contemporary. You know, he had this chef with his bowl and he's mixing, and it actually had a really gorgeous space to it, you know, almost two floors with the lights coming in from the natural light coming in the second floor. It was just it had a gorgeous feel to it.
Yeah, and there was a lot of little places too, yeah. like the Pluto's Doghouse. There was Goofy's Grill. There was a little deli that was there, which, as a native New Jerseyan who has come down to Florida, it's hard to find a really good deli.
Yeah.
This was, I think, it was a Hormel deli, so it sort of had the corporate sponsorship behind it. But there was a Little Bite place, and there was an ice cream parlor and a bake shop. Again, this was supposed to be a Disney village. So for those people that were eventually going to be residents at the Disney Village, which I think we've talked about in the past, mm-hmm. this was going to be their little downtown Disney shopping and dining area. So you had places like the haberdashery and, you know, the liquor store to go shopping and the little grocery store, but you had a deli, you had a little grill, you had the Little Bite. There was actually a pizzeria. It was mm-hmm. Mini Mia's pizzeria, mm-hmm. and it actually had deep dish pizza, which is something that is very hard to get here now.
To find anywhere, right.
Yeah. So and it had the Minnie Mouse and the sort of connection to the Disney character theme too. Like, again, it was Donald had his ice cream place, Goofy had a place, Mickey had Chef Mickey's, and Minnie had her thing, and Pluto had his doghouse. So the Fab Five each had their own dining locations in downtown Disney.
Yeah, and that was one of those, I think, there's made drives of how do we get kids to come down to the shopping district? Mm-hmm. How do we get kids? And you market it to them. You give them what they want, which is, yeah, they want their Fab Five to be able to see and eat.
Yeah. And so do you remember talking about getting kids down there? And I never saw it there, but I know that at one point when the movie premiered, Darth Vader could actually be found in downtown Disney.
Right. And Luke Skywalker too. I never saw it myself, but going back, I've kind of found things and I've seen some of these photos and I'm like, well, like there's your Star Wars weekend starting right there.
Right. So I think we would be remiss not to mention, we're talking about extinct downtown Disney. I think we need to mention some of these things are not necessarily extinct from the 70s and 80s, but even from the 2014s, mm-hmm. with Pollo Campero and Baby Cakes going by the wayside, and the Burger Place, which was not there very long.
No.
Pollo Campero, I dug because it wasn't just fried chicken, but they had really good sort of grilled spicy chicken, some unique food items there, which were sort of on the healthier side. And Baby Cakes really kind of made its mark because it was the first, vegan, gluten-free location there, and I knew Emily from Baby Cakes, and I met her years before when she was explaining to me what vegan and gluten free was, because I hadn't even heard about it, 5 years earlier, and she helped make that happen. Like, she followed the dream of getting that place that she worked at in New York City into Walt Disney World, and Baby Cakes you can still find in some of the grab and go locations, but the Baby Cakes location itself closed to make way for what is coming in Disney Springs.
Right, and they had the window where you got to watch them make the cupcakes and bake all these things. And I remember telling my wife when it closed, and I think it's the only time she'd ever cried at something closing at Disney World. But she loved Baby Cakes, and so it's still around. It's just not quite the same, but definitely something that's missed right now in that part, in that area.
Yeah, they had like frosting shooters, and they had this amazing like French toast and maple thing cupcake, and they were awesome. Like, you didn't have to go there just because you needed or wanted to eat vegan or gluten free. Like, some of the stuff was really, really good too.
Yeah,
and I kidded myself that I was eating healthy because it was vegan and gluten free.
Like, yeah, it's the sugar. Let's not talk about the sugar. Let's just talk about
I can justify anything. All right, let's quickly go and again, we're not going to hit all 30 resorts, but let's go back to the original three, right?
Yeah.
Because that's where we spent so much. If you weren't staying at the Days Inn, a few miles off property, you were staying at the Contemporary Polynesian or Fort Wilderness. And we've talked in the past about spending countless hours in the Fiesta Fun and quarters in the Fiesta Fun Center and places like the Top of the World Lounge and the Top of the World Supper Club, where quote unquote stars of the time like Carol Lawrence and Phyllis Diller and Mel Torme would actually go and perform. And I think when you think of places like the Contemporary, that's where my mind went. My mind went downstairs to the Fiesta Fun Center and the little, snacks that you can get
snack
there.
Bar. Yeah.
And all the way up top to the Top of the World. When you had to dress for dinner, you had to dress for dinner because it was an entertainment show.
Yeah, they required jackets. You know, it was Broadway at the Top was what it was called, and they required men to have their jackets. You know, women obviously in the, you know, in their dresses, and they also served Sunday brunch up there. But it was a very, you know, very, very dressed to the nines kind of an affair.
Yeah, and that was the signature place mm-hmm. to eat in Walt Disney World, and that why it was very much at the top of the world, and you could see, you know, fireworks and stuff there. And it changed obviously to become California Grill, which I love for low so many reasons.
But we could spend a whole show talking about why we love California Grill.
Yeah, and it's going to probably involve sushi and pork nigiri and desserts and amazing.
I think when I'm down, we need to do a live review next time I'm there. You know, that's probably how we need to do that.
You're on, buddy. Just give us a table in the corner and let us sit for six. And I have eaten there for 6 hours before.
Oh, easy. Yeah. Absolutely.
I think a lot of the changes really took place on the Grand Canyon Concourse mm-hmm. because restaurants that were there, they changed, they morphed, they put up walls, they took down walls. So I remember the Concourse Steakhouse was really one of the things I think that people missed most. It's now the Contempo Cafe, which actually references what the resort was going to be called, the Contempo Bay Resort. But the steakhouse was, again, it wasn't quite top of the world, but that's where you went for the really good steak on property.
Yeah, it was. It was the place up until probably Yachtsman opened. It was the place to get your steak on property. It was, you know, you're having the monorails come by. It seemed like a very nice dinner for anybody who was on vacation. Like that was going to be your meal of the week.
Right. And there was other places that were in that area that changed. There was the Pueblo Room mm-hmm. and the Terrace Cafe or the Terrace Buffeteria. Again, change lounge. And there was like the Grand Canyon Lounge. There was the Contemporary Cafe. There was the monorail club car, which is now Outer Rim. Was the lounge, was originally the lounge that you went to before you went to the Concourse Steakhouse or after, depending on how you spent your night. Mom and Dad would go to the monorail club car. The kids would go downstairs to the Fiesta Fun Center.
Right, and you know, 5 hours later we'd meet all back up and right. go to bed
because it was safe. Because where were you going to go? Like my parents trusted. Like there's nowhere you can go. It's completely safe. When you run out of quarters or energy, just come back up to the room. So
right,
a couple of little places here and there too. There was the Coconino Cove was in there too, and I'm not exactly sure where that was. I'm not sure if that was outside or not because I don't think it was. Because I know the Dock Inn was outside, and there was also one other. I thought there was another restaurant in there too, another little snack location too, but they change so often and they change so much that the names were changed to protect the innocent and the hungry. What about over at the Disney's Polynesian Village Resort, which name we are so happy is coming back? When you think Polynesian, where do you think?
I don't know if it was because it was next to the arcade and the Neverland Club, but the Tangaroa Terrace mm-hmm. is what jumps into my mind. And just being a different kind of thing. You weren't in the ceremonial house, so it had a different feel to it. You were more laid back. You could see it from the tiki on the side of the building. It had the goofy face, and he's still there. That's where I would think of when I first thought of the Polynesian.
And, it's funny because that's where the Neverland Club, which is now Club Disney, is.
Right.
And Moana Mickey's was there, too. And the space is still there. And I think that you were able to use it for like corporate functions. And I think they opened it temporarily when some, refurbishments were going on.
Right.
And there's construction going on there now. And I wonder if that is going to open up again because, we sort of don't know all the details about what Disney's Polynesian Village Resort Villas and Hotel is going to be. But you wonder if the, that little snack aisle or the terrace is potentially going to open up again.
One can only hope. I mean, the options of the Polynesian have always been great, and the more the merrier, really.
So I'm going to mention this place next because the first time I mentioned it, I said the name wrong, and I was quickly corrected.
Oh, I know exactly where you're going, and I'm so happy you're the one that's going to say it first.
It's not Captain Cook's. It's the Papiette Bay Veranda. It's not Papiette Bay, which is what I said a long time ago. It's the Papiette Bay Veranda. That is where Ohana is now, and they used to have like a little show there, like a little Polynesian review there, and they had Minnie's Menehune breakfast there. Different than the luau. Like the luau show that took that still takes place outside was the same, but this was sort of an indoor show that you could have up there until the mid-90s when it became Ohana.
Right, and they had the, you know, the character breakfast was Minnie and everyone all dressed in their you know, Polynesian finest and having a great meal. You know, I know our really wonderful friend Tony loved this breakfast. But it was one of those places. It's still there, but it had maybe a little bit of a different vibe.
Yeah, and so you probably also may not remember that where Boutique is now, mm-hmm. that was also a restaurant too. That was the South Seas Dining Room.
Right, it had a Polynesian buffet. I think it was just for dinner, but yeah, it was. They had that there as well. And, you know, the amount of dining had actually gone down at the Polynesian over the years.
Yeah, and you wonder with the changes that are coming and the addition of the Disney Vacation Club Resort and those awesome looking bungalows, which I think I need to stay in just to research. You wonder.
Let me know. I'll come down. I'll help you with that research.
You're such a giver. You're such a good guy. Thank you so much. But I wonder, and I think, and I hope that we'll see some additional dining locations as well.
Yeah, that's my hope as well. And it seems like they're heading that way, you know, trying to get people more back to the resorts and less away from, you know, going off property and finding something else someplace else.
And I know we've talked about this on past shows, and I did a big article too, which again, I'll try and remember, or just if you search on WDWradio.com for Eastern Winds, mm-hmm. it wasn't a restaurant. It wasn't in one of the buildings. In fact, it wasn't even on land. It was a Chinese junk. It was an old Chinese junk ship that was docked at the Polynesian that was used as a lounge. So you can go out and go on these little like evening cruises and have drinks and some snacks and things like that. And there's a whole great, you know, story and legend behind the ship and where it came from and where it was eventually sold to and how they eventually got it. But you want to talk about, again, let's sort of go back to the early, you know, Dick Nunes days and what the Polynesian was supposed to be and what it was supposed to look like. It was meant to be as though you were sitting at a resort somewhere off, you know, the Pacific coast somewhere. So you mm-hmm. would theoretically be sitting at the Papiete Bay veranda looking out over the water at the waves and the people surfing the waves onto the shore and this beautiful large Chinese junk, you know, moored at the dock.
Yeah. Yeah, or actually sailing in the waters because it had gone out for, you know, its evening excursion. It from there, even, you know, even with the castle in the background, the contemporary in the background, you would have felt like you had just taken off and gone off to an island and you know, left Disney World far behind.
And I wonder – and I think, you know, the Polynesian, when it opened 40-some-odd years ago, it very much embraced that, you know, kitschy – tiki mm-hmm. culture of the late 60s and 70s. Now in 2014 and going forward, it's almost a nostalgic look as opposed to a modern Polynesian type resort. So I am encouraged by what I've seen in terms of concept art and having been to Aulani and seeing what these Imagineers can do.
Right.
I like the direction it's going in terms of making it a much more, you know, bright, open, airy, embracing mm-hmm. this village feel, which is it's supposed to have when the Polynesian eventually reopens.
Yeah, it's gonna. I've probably seen a lot of the same artwork, and I think it's just gonna knock everyone's socks off once it's back, and it's gonna, you know, redefine itself as the crown jewel of Walt Disney World.
And so let's go from, you know, upscale dining at the Contemporary to fun, unique dining at the Polynesian to what I think, unless you have something else, sort of the last stop on our resort's mm-hmm. loop here, over at Fort Wilderness, you're saying, well, all right, what, you know, obviously Hoop-Dee-Doo is there and Trails End is there. What could you possibly be thinking that's extinct at Fort Wilderness? But who can't remember Breakfast with Melvin the Moose?
Melvin the Moose breakfast show. Which, and Chip and Dale, the unofficial mascots of everything Fort Wilderness, apparently. yeah, they did. This came out in 1986. Depending on when you're looking at it, it was either Melvin the Moose Breakfast Show or the Chip and Dale Country Morning Jamboree. And this was this great show. It was hosted by Cindy Lou in Alabama and the professor on piano. And you had – they did this great introduction number, and you have Chip and Dale who are cooking your breakfast of, you know, chocolate chip biscuits, and you're baking your biscuits and gravy, hash browns. and they introduce their host, who is Melvin the Moose from the Country Bear Jamboree. And he's sitting on a little framed – in a little framed picture, sitting right on the stage in Hoop-Dee-Doo, and he's carrying on and telling bad jokes and everything. And this is actually where my lost piece of – you know, my treasure came from when I was digging through and I was moving. I actually found it when the finale – they actually gave guests kazoos.
You don't have a kazoo, do you?
I most certainly have a kazoo. I didn't think of that. I thought I had lost it. I have my kazoo with Davy Crockett Mickey on it and the yellow and red. And I found it about 3 weeks ago. And I was like, yes, Melvin the Moose, I have my kazoo.
You've got to tweet that or post it. Or if you have it, we'll link up to your picture of the kazoo. Because I remember getting it and people like Disney would not give out kazoos. What is that? Insane, man.
I tell you what, when this airs, I will tweet out a picture for everyone to see the kazoo, because I did. I finally tracked mine. I couldn't believe it was still in the box. I was like, oh, we darn, I still have this thing. So that was one of the, you know, that show for a character breakfast was one of the more fun breakfasts you could have on property.
And the neat thing was that it was like a Hoop-Dee-Doo. You couldn't just make reservations at 8:45. No, there was like an 8 o'clock show and a 10 o'clock show or whatever the times were. You had to go for the seating and the show. Much like Diamond Horseshoe, but they didn't have 10 shows throughout the day. They had two. You had two seatings for breakfast.
Yeah, especially if you were staying at the campgrounds, you didn't know what was going on. You'd walk by Pioneer Hall on your way to the boat to go to the Magic Kingdom. You're like, why are all these people here? Mm-hmm. And they were there to see Melvin.
And again, think back to some of the things we're talking about. Even places like Empress Lily and the Polynesian, all the different types of character meals and character breakfast that you had. I think this one, I'm happy we saved it for last. I think this was the truly unique one out of it because, and I say this in a good way, you need to make an effort to go to Fort Wilderness, right? You can't just hop on the monorail and get there. You got to get the boat or you got to get the bus or get the golf cart or be staying there. But it was a nice payoff. Like I think Fort Wilderness, when you get to, you know, Pioneer Hall and you get to there's a huge payoff. And it's one of those, again, we've talked about reasons to stay there, reasons to spend the day there. This would have been a really neat way to start your morning off with Melvin the Moose. It's totally kid-friendly. It's interactive. It's live. You know, that sort of down-home, stick-to-your-ribs, energy for the day kind of breakfast. And look, the Country Bears were a big deal when Magic Kingdom opened. Remember, that was the first ever attraction to open in Walt Disney World first and then be copied in Disneyland because it was that popular.
Yeah, and at the time, you know, when we're looking at this like mid-80s, you have, you know, they had the Christmas hoedown. They had the vacation hoedown. You know, they were huge at this moment.
And I think what happened was at this moment is the operative term because it was originally focusing on Melvin the Moose, and then everybody's like, mid-80s, like Melvin who? Then it's like, whoa, let's go. Let's sort of play off the popularity of characters that are more recognizable. So it was Chip and Dale's Jamboree.
Right.
Oh, with Melvin the Moose, as our special guest.
And he was still kind of, the special guest, the host kind of person. But, it took that recognition of, oh, I just saw this in Frontierland, or this is like a preview of, oh, we're going to see this a little bit later.
Yeah. So it was neat. And it didn't run, had a relatively long run, but this is not one of the people you don't hear a lot of people going, oh my God, I remember going to Melvin the Moose, because I think it seemed like, oh, we only have a few days here at Walt Disney World. We can't spend our entire morning schlepping out over, not that it's a schlep, but schlepping at the time. It seemed like a schlep out to Fort Wilderness. Or if you weren't staying there, and still to this day, I think if you're not staying at certain resorts, you don't venture out of your own resort or theme parks to go eat somewhere else.
No, absolutely. And Fort Wilderness did a lot to try to bring people in, whether it was the Marshmallow Marsh or it was the campfire or Hoop-Dee-Doo. They wanted people to come see it, but they were very insular. They're like, well, we have the Fiesta Fun Center, or we have all these great things that we can do at our resort. And so they don't tend to explore outside of that zone. And if anything, I know you and I have over the years prodded people, no, please go explore these places, see what there actually is to offer there. Because at Fort Wilderness, I mean, you could spend days there and not repeat the activities.
Right. And we just actually did a show, show 362, sort of everything you want to know about Fort Wilderness. And, and look, if you think back to 1971, the early 70s, Walt Disney World was very much heralded as the vacation kingdom of the world. It's not the happiest place on earth. That's it. It was the vacation kingdom of the world. So the idea was you came here for a week not to do everything in the Magic Kingdom 10 times, but to spend time at your resort, to go visit the other resorts. So you would take a morning, you would take half a day, you would take an evening to go to the Contemporary, to go out to Fort Wilderness, to go wherever it was for these destination dining experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things, you know, there were so many offerings that they wanted you to see. And even in, you know, everything you looked at, it was like planning your vacation, and it showed you everything at all the resorts, not for the resort, you know, not for the guests of that resort, for every guest of Walt Disney World.
So I'm going to finish with, you know, the pick your favorite child question. Ryan Wilson, you're given unlimited budget to bring back any one dining experience or restaurant in Walt Disney World history. What would it be?
Oh, that's a tough one. Part of me says, bring back the actual second floor kitchen in the Columbia Harbor House for whatever reason. I would probably see something in the Odyssey. If I had my, you know, my druthers, I would say that's the one thing to do. Like, you know, give it – but make it something unique. Make it something special and give it its due.
You know, there's a lot of places I'd like to see come back for different reasons. But I think I would have to say, practically speaking and venue-wise, the Adventureland Veranda. I think Magic Kingdom could certainly use another dining location, whether it be sit-down or counter service, however you were to do it. I think the venue is so beautiful and fits in so well. And I think especially with the popularity of Magic Kingdom, you could always use a little bit more there. So as much as for sentimental reasons, I almost went to the Diamond Horseshoe show, I'm going to stick with Adventureland Veranda. But I want to hear from you, the listener. I want to hear which of these or something else that we might have missed you would love to have come back, or you missed so much, or that favorite food item that you wish Walt Disney World would bring back. Do me a favor. Come to the show notes at wdwradio.com. Click on the podcast link and then find this week's episode. There you can leave a comment. Again, we'll keep commenting there. Go to facebook.com/wdwradio and or tweet me. I'm at Lou Mangiello. And include Ryan Wilson. He's Maine ST Gazette. I'll put links to all of his stuff in the show notes as well. Tell us what you miss and why, whether it's food, restaurant, dining experience, whatever. And also, please, don't just follow Ryan, but go and check out all of the good stuff he has over at MainStreetGazette.com and say, Ryan, I can't wait for you to come back on WW Radio because nobody has more fun than us, especially as we look back on our sometimes ridiculous sense of nostalgia.
It's true, but yeah, nobody has more fun than us.
Awesome, man. Thank you so very much. We have lots more to cover. And I'm trying Melvin the Moose. Maybe bring back Melvin the Moose.
Or make the, you know, Adventureland Veranda kind of like Be Our Guest, you know, table service or quick service during the day, table service at night, have a very, you know, have a tiki kind of show going on, or there's all kinds of options there.
Odyssey Restaurant. What would you do with the Odyssey Restaurant?
Yeah, there's so many options.
It's time for our Walt Disney World Trivia Question of the Week, where I invite you to test your knowledge on Walt Disney World history, or see how well you pay attention to the details and what you see, and maybe even what you hear. You can then enter for a chance to win a Disney prize package. Before we get to this week's question, let's go back, review last week's, and select our winner. So last week, I was once again in a very nostalgic mood and was thinking a lot about the original Journey into Imagination Pavilion that opened back in 1983, specifically the ImageWorks area, that post-show experience that took place on the second floor, which has unfortunately been closed for years, and remembering how elements of the original Journey into Imagination attraction were brought into the upstairs experience as well. And in fact, Dreamfinder had his own school, and it was the Dreamfinder School of blank. And your question was last week was to fill in that blank. And again, hundreds of you, almost 1,000 of you, responded and got this one correct, because it was, of course, the Dreamfinder's School of Drama. So congratulations and thanks to all of you who entered last week. I randomly selected one entry from all the correct ones that were submitted, and last week's winner of all six of my virtual audio walking tours of the Magic Kingdom, a copy of my new book, 102 Ways to Save Money For and at Walt Disney World, and a mystery vinyl Mation is Brent Petrillo. So Brent, congratulations. Please send me your contact info. I'll get your prize package out to you right away. If you played last week and didn't win, that's okay, because here's your next chance to enter in this week's Walt Disney World Trivia Challenge. So many attractions in Walt Disney World feature celebrity voiceover artists and wonderful narrators, everything from safety spiels to cameos to full attraction narrations. And one of the greatest is comedian Don Rickles, and he's actually been featured in more than one attraction over the years at Walt Disney World. So tell me at least two places in Walt Disney World where you can, or at one time could, hear the voice of Don Rickles. You have until Sunday, July 27th at 11:59 p.m. to send your answer to contest@wdwradio.com. You'll be playing, once again, for all the audio tours, a signed copy of my new book, 102 Ways to Save Money For and at Walt Disney World, and a mystery Disney pin. So good luck and have fun. That's going to do it for this week's show. Thanks so much for taking the time to tune in this and every week. Once again, thanks to all of you who have been going over to Amazon.com, rating and reviewing my book, 102 Ways to Save Money For and at Walt Disney World. Again, it's available in print for your Kindle, in iBooks, Kobo, and you can also get it as a PDF by visiting Disney102.com. Special thanks to Logan Stumpf and David Fay for their recent reviews. Again, we now have more than 100 reviews. Really appreciate it. Very, very helpful. So thank you again to all of you who have purchased the book and are enjoying it and sharing the love on Amazon, and also sending me your pictures of you with the book sort of out and about. I've had people send me pictures of the book at the beach, on airplanes, in the parks, anywhere at all. You can always just tweet me at Lou Mangiello or send them to Lou@wdwradio.com, and I'll share those on Facebook and Twitter as well. Don't forget that in addition to this podcast, which you can find and subscribe over on iTunes, please join me for WDW Radio Live every Wednesday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern at wdwradiolive.com. I do a live video broadcast, an interactive chat room where I talk about this week's Walt Disney World news, ask and answer questions to those of you in the chat room. When the news is done, we normally just hang out for a little while after and talk just about anything at all that you want. Again, that's Wednesdays, 7:30 at WDW Radio Live. You can watch via your web browser or by going to the Ustream app for your iPhone or Android device and just searching for WDW Radio. Also, visit the website for daily blog posts, new videos, our newsletter, the iPhone app, and lots more. Also, if you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel, go to youtube.com/WDW Radio. I do release some videos not only there first, but exclusively to YouTube. So if you do want to catch them, please go and subscribe and comment there as well. I love hearing from you. So if you have a comment or a question, you can email me at lou@wdwradio.com. Or if you want to be heard on the air, click on the Leave Lou a Voicemail button on the website or call 407-900-9391. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'm at Lou Mangiello, facebook.com/Lou Mangiello. Or you can like the WDW Radio page at facebook.com/, you guessed it, WDW Radio. And as much as I love connecting with you guys online, nothing, my friends, beats a handshake and a hug. And that's why I like to do Meets of the Month every month in Walt Disney World. The next Meet of the Month is going to be this Saturday at Starbucks in downtown Disney on the west side. That's going to be Saturday, July 26th from 2 to 4 p.m. Also in August, our meetup is going to be Saturday morning, August 9th at the Boardwalk Bakery from 9:30 to 11 before our Neverland and Sea event kicks off. Stay tuned for information about September's Meet of the Month, but also mark your calendars for Saturday, September 27th. I'll be doing a live broadcast from the Disney Weddings and Honeymoon Showcase over at Disney's Grand Floridian Resort and Spa. So if you can't get out there for the event and you're thinking about planning a wedding or your honeymoon to Walt Disney World, I'll be covering the event for you live. Also, I have other meetups not in Walt Disney World. I'll be in Dallas in August on the 16th and 17th speaking at Podcast Movement, Going to have a meetup that weekend, most likely Sunday night, August 17th, somewhere at the Westin Galleria. Definitely stay tuned to loumangello.com/events for more information as well. Quick thanks to my partners and sponsors, Mouse Fan Travel. Look, if you're coming to Walt Disney World or on a cruise or to Disneyland, or if you want to go to Dallas, Mouse Fan Travel can help you get the best possible prices, all available discounts. Most important, they will give you an incredible level of personal service at zero cost to you. Visit them over at mousefantravel.com and get Celebrations Magazine delivered right to your door by visiting celebrationspress.com. And as always, my friends, and you are my friends, whether we have met yet or not, all I ask is that if you like the show, please, please help spread the word. Let others know about it. Tweet out that you're listening. Come by, comment on Facebook. Share links over there as well. And please go to iTunes, rate and review the show there as well. Bearcat Matt, Ray Noma, Boo-ah-ha-ha, Mr. JGG, and Jess Chambers recently posted some great reviews there. So thank you very, very much. And not just for the reviews and for taking the time to listen, but for letting me share my passion for Disney with you in so many ways. In case you can't tell, I love Disney. I love talking about the things that make us all happy about going there. And it is an incredible blessing and a gift to be able to share that with you. So thank you. And I want you to feel the same way about what you do every day. So if what you're doing right now isn't working, right? If the plan's not working, change the plan. Don't change the goal. And if there's ever any way that I can help you, please tweet me or email me. Let me know what I can do. But until then, and until next time, I hope you guys have a fantastic week this week. So until next week, have a wonderful week, everybody. Thanks for listening. See ya.
Hi, Lou. This is Tori Jeans calling from a much too warm Phoenix, Arizona. My husband and I have been playing catch-up, and we just finished listening to show number 276 about the various nooks and crannies of World Showcase. In that show, you made a beautiful point about the representation of the Temple of Heaven and how you can stand in the center of the room and take in the beauty and symbolism of that structure. What we found funny is that my husband and I just visited Beijing for our honeymoon last year, and we visited the actual Temple of Heaven, and unfortunately, what we found is that you can no longer enter the structure. They have it completely barred off. The best you can do is stick your head over some railings and try and peer up, that being contingent upon you pushing past a bunch of other tourists to even get near the bars. So in this case, I would say 1 point Disney, zero China. Anyways, thought that was kind of funny to share. We both love the show and the positivity that you bring to our days, and we're sure many others. Keep up the good work. See ya.
Hello, Lou Manzello. Hello, WDW Radio. Fox people and listeners and friends. This is Darlene Nagy from West Seneca, New York. We are now 15 days, I don't know which countdown I'm using. I am so excited for the Disneyland cruise with the WDW Radio Group, and I'm actually going to be going to Disney in 13 days, and then I will be going in another 47 days with my daughter. I'm looking forward to the Neverland event. That will be a lot of fun. Thank you, Lou and Becky, for throwing that together for us that can make it. I hope to see a lot of my friends at that event. At the Atlantic Dance Hall in, oh my goodness, now less than 2 weeks. Yay! Or 3 weeks. 3 weeks. Less than 3 weeks. 2 weeks I'll be going to Disney. Yay! Okay, guys. Have a great one and a magical day. Stay safe and dry and enjoying the summer weather. Talk to you real soon. You've got a friend.